Is buying an ad in the Super Bowl sort of like buying a billboard that faces the wrong direction? This is the Focus Group.
They're all business, except when they're not. It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash.
Welcome to the Focus Group. John Nash here with my good friend and co-host Tim Bennett. Focus Group Radio is, well, focusgroupradio.com is our website. You can learn all about us there, including our partner, Deep Discount, who we'll be visiting with a little bit later in the show. And you'll learn about TFG Unbuttoned, our companion podcast to the Focus Group, which drops on Tuesdays in your audio feed. And of course, if you're watching us on YouTube, you know we have a video component. But if you're an audio listener, the show drops on Saturdays. Mr. Bennett, welcome to the new week.
Hello, Mr. Nash.
Tim and I were just out in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
It was a very brief trip. It was about like a Thursday morning to a Saturday afternoon. And we both commented today and the last couple of days how we don't really know how we did this when we were younger in our business careers, because we used to go to California frequently, San Diego or Los Angeles or San Fran. I was wiped out.
Yeah, no, I was tired too. And certainly we've said this many, many times. Flying is not what it used to be. I was shocked. I was aggravated. You know, I flew American. Mm-hmm. which absorbed U.S. Airways, which I had minor status there. All my status was on United, because when I lived out west, United was kind of the preferred carrier. And so American, I had zero status. And you know, I have flown private lately. And
Yes, we have.
so we go out to see this and this project we're working on, and I was crammed. You know how crammed the seats are. So I spent $298 to buy the exit row. You would think that would allow you to get on the plane. I just spent an additional $300 right on the ticket. So you would think that would allow me to board earlier.
Yeah.
So the groups go from 1 to 9. No, I'm group 9, you know, myself and you know, two other people in group 9. So I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to place my bag anywhere, because everybody's dragging their luggage. And the other thing was, when I checked in, I don't know what airline you were on, but when I checked in, I had the privilege of paying $48.33, whatever the number was, to pay to get bumped up to get on a little earlier.
Yes.
I could have gone on in between groups 1 through 4. So I thought, I'm not paying another $80 or $90 to board early.
The nickel and diming. No.
Are they charging you to get to board early too?
JetBlue. Is that a thing? I flew JetBlue. It was a basic ticket. You could pay to board early. You could pay for expedited security. I passed right through that because we already paid for that with TSA pre. Yeah. We have TSA pre. And then they assign you a seat. And I looked at the seat map and it was all X's, all taken. And I'm like, I'm going to get screwed and get a middle row. So I kept checking and checking. And eventually one day an aisle seat popped up, like 19C. And I clicked on it because I thought, that's going to be my seat. This seat's going to cost you $40. The exit row was $180 or $200, like what you had on American. I thought, I've flown JetBlue. They have decent coach. It's pretty good legroom. I just spent the $40 to get that seat and called it a day. That's the only thing I spent as an upgrade on JetBlue. But you have to buy everything. They only give
you. Did you buy food on board?
Food bag was like... pieces of fruit, some nuts, something else like $11 or $14. You can, you know, it was, you had to, anyhow, only credit card. So I had a protein bar with me. They did serve water and they did distribute like little bags of these bagel chip pretzels. I actually counted the pretzel. There were 10 little pretzels in the bag. I'm like, oh my God, thank God I'm not starving. And then, of course, my paranoia about flying these days, not about being in the air, but about missing your plane because of the lines in both directions, I breezed through. With TSA pre, they're like, good morning. I'm through in like 5 minutes, and I had an hour and a half to kill in the airport terminal. And I was not going to get, I didn't get sucked into any food in New York, but in LA on the morning we left, I bought an egg sandwich with a bottle of water, and it was $17. I was like, what is this, right?
I bought an iced tea for 6. I could have got 3 gallons down here for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised about on both ends, as you were, because I flew out of Philadelphia. I was surprised about how easy it was to go through. Yeah. Although I forgot about my knee replacement.
Yeah.
So I go through TSA because you don't have to take your shoes off. You don't have to take anything off. Well, meanwhile, right there, I'm setting off all kinds of alarms. And so they had me take my belt off. Then I had to take my sweater off because they thought that had metal on it. Then I had to take my wallet out of my pocket. I was almost down to my panties. And it kept going off. And I said, I don't know. I don't have anything. You must have something. And I really had to think. I thought, man, why? What would I said, oh my God. I said, I had knee replaced. Well, you should have told us earlier. Oh, they had me take my shoes off. So when I went through LA, I said right away to the TSA person that I had a knee replacement, but they still made me go through. I have to go through the thing where you put your arms up.
Yep.
Like the photo thing. Booth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't have to take the shoes off, but no, they still made me take my belt off.
I think I've mentioned this before, and come everybody, anybody listening has got to believe or at least suspect this. It's theatrical.
Yes. Yeah.
And I have a friend who works for the TSA, and he said all of that front of house security is basically what I just said. It's almost like theatrics because the heavy lifting happens on all the scanned luggages, you know, all the stuff you check, all the cargo hold stuff. And if your bag, when your bag's going through the belt, they're really highly trained to see stuff. And it's all because
do you think they scan? Do you think they scan all of checked luggage? I wondered about that, whether they scan that stuff.
Checked luggage behind the scenes goes through massive machines. They check it. That was a huge investment the TSA made. But while we were in LA, Tim was being interviewed for something, and I had some time to myself, so I had some lunch, and I was sitting across from something called the Bradbury. And I kept staring at the building, wondering why it was making me remember something. And I finally remembered it was the building they shot. They used the interior for the movie Blade Runner. Of course, they made it look all dingy and dirty. It had literally been renovated. It was a gorgeous old office building. But the Tim and John show is always about the connections between the two of us. So me, I connect the Bradbury building to Blade Runner and science fiction. And Tim, you said you recognized the building from a music video.
Right. So Justin Timberlake and Chris Stapleton had done a video for Saying Something, which was on, I think, Timberlake's last album. And I thought that was a really cool building because that's where they shot the video, because you don't see much video anymore. And I thought, wow, that's a pretty elaborate set. I wonder where that was, because they had the elevators and all the stairwells and open
cast open iron concept,
right,
tile
with the brick. So typical of us, I recognized it because of the music video, and you did because of a sci-fi film.
I decided to bring that up on the show because it made me smile so much when you put that through. And just one quick one. Have you been paying any attention to this Blake Lively, Jason Baldoni scandal?
You know, something popped up in my 6.5 hours on the plane. I was I was reading about it, and then I got bored of it, but there sounded like something. Were there text messages back and forth?
Oh, he has posted all this stuff for the court of public opinion. And the only thing I'll say about this is as this drags on, wouldn't you say, Tim, as a businessman, that both of their careers are now toasted?
Well, she said, you mean his and hers?
His and hers, yeah.
Because she's saying that he was inappropriate
in a
scene that they were doing for the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, why didn't she say something then or stop him then?
Oh, and because that's what he's trying to prove.
Yeah. Right, they show the video. They show it all the time of here's what transpired. And then I guess her husband, Ryan Reynolds, he chimed in. But what did he say? He said something, or Blake was assuming, based upon texts he got, that Ryan was enjoying it? No.
There was one thing where Ryan Reynolds accused him of fat-shaming his wife.
Oh, okay.
Because there was a scene in the movie where he was supposed to pick her up like a dancer would jump in your arms. And he has well-documented back problems. He's had discectomies. He's got some spinal issues going on. So he simply asked what her weight was so that he could train to properly do the stunt and not injure his back. And then Ryan Reynolds called him in, kept yelling at him, how dare you fat shame? You never ask a woman her weight. And I'm thinking, what are you, crazy? This is a movie and they're going to be doing this. Anyway, I just keep shaking my head thinking she accused him first. He came right back at her because basically he knew the minute she accused him, his career was either going to be toast or on ice for years. And why not burn it all down? But if you were a Hollywood executive, would you even want to go near either of them again?
Well, no, because it's, well, particularly, I don't want to say particularly her, but if she's going to be that sensitive about that sort of role, she'll never be offered one again.
Nope. And her husband may be Ryan Reynolds, and they got tons of money. But again, Ryan Reynolds is going to go to the executives and say, well, unless you use...
Well, do you think it will affect him? Do you think it will affect him, Ryan Reynolds, in his business? Because he's got a production company, right?
I don't know. That's a great one, Tim. Mm-hmm. It's almost like being too close to the fire. Like, is he going to get burned too? But apparently he was the one, he encouraged her to do this and to file suit. So it's just one of those weird things. I'm like, wow, I've never seen two people do such an effective job of torching their future income earning ability in an industry known for you're not working all the time. So anyway, on that happy note, Mr. Bennett, what caught your eye?
What caught your eye? Here's what Tim and John found.
Speaking of travel... although this is the cruise line. So the headline here is free cruise ends up costing man $47,000 after he fell ill with the flu while on board. So it's just a short little article, but it says that there's no such thing as a free lunch, but a comped BLT would never lead directly to bankruptcy, would it? A Minnesota man now owes $47,000 in medical debt after he received treatment for the flu while on a Norwegian cruise line ship. He won a free cruise and he purchased travel insurance. I never purchased travel insurance. Do you?
I have, yes. Have I shouldn't you? Laugh. But I did it for my Girona bike trip because my sister convinced me, and I think it was smart, because if some of those people, on that trip I went, two of the guests got COVID halfway through and they had to be pulled off the trip and trip insurance paid for the rest.
So I was going to say, so it does make sense because I usually used to always bypass it. But after this article, I'm thinking, So anyway, he won this free cruise. He purchased the travel insurance, but it covered medical expenses on the insurance he bought up to $20,000.
Ooh.
However, it said the insurer refused to cover the visit to the ship's medical center. So the guy's name is Mike Cameron, and his girlfriend won a week-long trip to the Caribbean. A couple of days into the voyage, Cameron came down with a severe case of the flu and spent 3 days receiving treatment from the medical staff or the medical center on the ship. The personnel reassured him that his insurance would cover it. However, that wasn't the case, and the full amount was withdrawn from the couple's two credit cards on file. So he and his girlfriend put their credit cards,
which
with
you
the
do.
Ship.
Yeah, which for you gratuities. Do. And
And they ended up maxing out both of their credit cards, I guess unbeknownst to them, which they were furious about. And then the traveler's insurance doesn't want to pay until they have a discussion with his health insurance provider. And his health insurance doesn't want to pay because they say that he was traveling abroad.
Yeah.
Now, I read in the comments section, a lot of people said, I had no idea, is this true, that your insurance, because you and I have done international travel before, mm-hmm. and I always assumed if I got sick that my health insurance would cover it. What a lot of people are saying in the comments here, because I couldn't quite follow this, is they said that generally what will happen is, and they gave a number of examples of people in the comments, said if you're at another country that has pretty much socialized medicine, maybe you'll be out $100 or $200, regardless of how sick you are. And so insurance doesn't necessarily have to cover it because it's far cheaper than it would be if you ran it through your United States insurance that we have, our healthcare mm-hmm. system. They talked about someone who broke a leg and they got a bill for $30 or something. It's that sort of thing. So they said another passenger on Norwegian on that same trip was charged $5,500 for treatment for a severe bacterial infection. And it's now taken them over 6 months to cover the costs, and he's fighting with an insurance company. So Norwegian Cruise Line's adamant that its medical pricing aligns with that of other airlines, but the cruise industry is known for not taking good care of customers, they said. And they gave another example. They said last year, 30 cruise passengers boarded a United flight after a voyage. They all experienced flu-like symptoms. They puked so much that the carrier had to remove the plane from service to be cleaned.
Oh my God.
The people got so
sick. Oh my God, right?
It says the CDC now has recorded that gastrointestinal illness outbreaks on cruise ships is at a 12-year high. So if you go on a cruise ship, you're going to get the runs, probably, or shits. Last year, the cruise line reported 1,900 passengers got severely ill on board. So anyway, he's now fighting with his U.S. or personal medical insurance to try to cover this $47,000 bill. But both his insurer and the travel insurance don't want to cover the $47,000. So what do you do?
It's so, Tim, It's so typical, right? So typical. Yeah. It's like buying homeowners insurance and something happens and guess what? Oh, they're not going to cover it.
Yeah. Oh, it's an act of God.
Yeah, it's a force majeure. It's an act of God. I mean, this should be so, like, what kind of treatment was he possibly getting? And he probably had aspirin, fluids, because the flu doesn't necessarily require an antibiotic. It's viral, so.
Fluids might get an intravenous, right? Get some extra fluid in them. That's about it. Remember, we were on the cruise ship, and I got hurt pretty bad when I fell.
You scratched your back up, yeah.
Now, that was a different sort of, but I remember they wanted to give me a tetanus shot. There was a Polish doctor who didn't speak English, remember?
Yeah.
Were you there with me when they were?
I wasn't with him. You came back with all the taped up.
Someone has that picture.
I do. I do have a picture of you all. Yeah.
But I remember calling my doctor in the States, of all things. Right. How I did it, I don't
know.
Ship
to shore. Ship to shore.
Then my doctor's like, oh, poor baby. I said, well, they want to give me a tetanus shot. Don't let them give you a tetanus shot.
Did he say that?
Yeah, he said, don't let them do adamant, that. No. He goes, did you puncture yourself on anything rusted or are you bleeding? And I said, no.
No, it was rocks.
So remember they wanted me to go in the ocean. He said, that's the worst thing you could have done if you were cut, all the bacteria from the ocean.
Salt water will cure you. Yeah,
I ended up fine. I was a little sore, but I ended up being fine.
Yeah.
So what caught your eye?
Mine is extremely different, but I think it's very funny. It involves something that apparently Jeep owners do to each other and also people who take cruises. This fits into your story, too. And so the headline here is quirky car accessory flying off shelves. So apparently Jeep owners do something called ducking. And they'll leave a rubber duck, like the kind you would float, like the typical rubber duck, right, that you in a bathtub. They leave it on the windshield or the hood of a car, another Jeep. And a lot of this takes place in San Francisco and in the California area, but it happens other places as well. So much so that there was a store called Quack, K-W-A-K, which is kind of funny because Quack is Q-U-A-C-K. I like the K-W-A-K. Opened in June of 2023 and offers nearly 600 variations of rubber ducks, including versions that resemble Taylor Swift and Willie Nelson. Who thought? These two guys started as a pop-up store in response to this funny little gag thing that people do either on... Sometimes people leave ducks in rooms on a cruise ship hidden somewhere. Like you might open a drawer and find the duck. Oh, I've been ducked.
And then what do? You take it and put it somewhere else?
You take it or maybe you pass it on. Maybe it's you pass it on, right? So the guys that opened this store, Quack, anticipated it would be a pop-up type shop that would only run for a few months. But when they had sales crossing the six-figure zone and higher, they've renegotiated their lease, and they're looking to be a permanent fixture, and they're looking at maybe franchising the idea.
Is this something else we missed?
No, Tim, you didn't miss anything with Quack and with ducking people, because I actually thought about this for a minute. I thought, you know, is this like one-hit wonder type thing? Like you build your business on the notion that you're going to sell rubber ducks because there's this craze where people duck each other, either on cruise ships or Jeeps, and maybe it goes further than that. But franchising it?
So the Jeep people, so if you're a Jeep owner, and you said you this was out in San Francisco or whatever, so you take the little rubber duck, and what do you do with it? You put it on their car?
On the windshield, yeah.
And then... The owner comes out and finds it, ha, ha, ha. And I guess they then duck somebody, another Jeep owner.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a business.
And well, that's why I think that, you know.
I got to catch up.
You know, so I say only in California and maybe only in San Francisco can you do something with a rubber duck and call it a massive business and to have a store filled with them and then say, oh, you know what? Maybe we want to do a franchising. We'll get people to buy into this too, right?
I guess it's like the old people down the villages that got those color loofahs that let you know whether you're a swinger or you're looking for a mate. Remember? They'll have them tied to their golf carts.
Yes, I do.
I think we got to come up with something, John. What are we going to do it for?
I don't know if it's going to be with ducking. Would you like to build a business around it? I mean, if you had heard of this.
If it's a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, let's say
do something with the Leslies and Subaru.
Let's say you heard that people in Philadelphia liked putting little miniature Shriner hats, because you guys are known for the Shriners, parade and the Shriners, right? Maybe there's a little rubber Shriners hat you would put it on people. Oh, you've been Shrinered. I'm just making this up. But would you ever think of turning that into like a store?
No, but online I would, and I'd collect the coin and get out.
So that's the second thing. Like, if you want to start, you know, ducking people, go to Amazon and buy like a gross of ducks, right? You don't have to go to the quack.
I think I, like I got that. An idea or two here I'm going to talk to you offline about so nobody takes it.
Are you having some ideas now?
Yeah.
Folks, we've entered dangerous territory.
Just, it's going to be our pet rock. I don't care. Get in, get out.
You and I have several ideas that revolve around either currency or maybe you have another idea about something. But and maybe the time is ripe for one of these kind of coded, putting something on people's cars and stuff. And it doesn't have to be a rainbow because we want to, maybe if you invent it.
I talked
don't
to
share.
No, I won't. But I talked to somebody whose partner was on Shark Tank. Ah. And I actually asked him if they'd like to come on the show. I don't know if you're interested.
I love it. I love it.
But he talked about what a horrible experience it was.
See, I wasn't expecting you to say, well, maybe partly I was expecting you to say it was a horrible experience, but.
Well, he was supposed to go out as, and I won't tell you the product yet, because, well, if we have him as a guest, but he was hired just to go present because the inventor of the product was too scared and they're too afraid to do it. So he was sent out there to present
got
his
it.
Product.
Okay.
And it wasn't ready for prime time. And he got chewed up
by the sharks.
But yeah, because I recognized him and I said, were you? He's like, oh my God, it's on all the time because I watch CNBC. He goes, I should be getting royalties from that show.
And it's one of your favorites too.
Yeah, so I'll see if he's available. We'll have him on and talk to him about his
I would love it.
On Shark
I would
Tank.
Love the behind the scenes, what happened, how did it go? Yeah. I say that's a plus. So then we'll talk about our own version of quack and ducking, right?
Well, it's, you know what? I'm still mad at Bombas because you and I have been doing socks forever.
Giving them away. Yeah.
Right.
I would say the Bombas.
I got a whole list of things we missed. I'm going to add this to the
They're
ducking.
All slightly different, though, Tim, than what actually took off. But that's
no,
okay.
No, not really.
Giving away socks as a promotional item is not quite the same as buy one, give one to someone.
Who thought you could differentiate socks? Right?
True. True. Yeah.
And people like our socks. I'm mad about Bombas. There's a number of things I'm mad about.
Bob is going to have such a laugh when he hears the show in the car. Because he loves when you go off the rail. And if we were on Sirius, Matt would be playing the Andy Griffith theme. All right. Speaking of which, we're going to visit with our pals over at Deep Discount now. You can get to Deep Discount by going to our site, focusgroupradio.com, and click on their logo, which is a shark. Sharky. And you'll get to Deep Discount and all their incredible merchandise. It's movies, TVs, games, books, you name it. You can find it there. And this week was an interesting sale they're running. And it's the anniversary of Y2K. Like 25 years ago today. Remember, we were all scared when the number was going to click over and everything was going to...
Yep.
Electric grids were going to come down.
The world was going to stop.
Can't take money out. Get money out now. Get the cash
out. It's going to reset to 1900.
But it's a... Yeah. 19, exactly. So it's a fun sale in some ways because it focuses directly on films that were released and available in the year 2000. So what did you pick?
So I was shocked about Owl, Some of the Mora, because to me, I thought, oh, that just came out. But
came
it was
out,
20,
yeah.
25 years ago. I had picked, and I haven't seen it in quite a while, but it popped up, so I chose it, Miss Congeniality.
What a wonderful.
And it
Michael
was produced.
Caine's in the movie, Bill Shatner. I love the movie. Bergen, right?
Candace Bergen, Benjamin Bratt, produced by Sandra Bullock as well as starring in it. And it's a 2000 American action comedy film, as I said, produced and starring Sandra Bullock as Gracie Hart, a tomboy agent who's asked by the FBI to go undercover.
Gracie
as
Lou
a
Hart.
Contestant. Gracie, as a contestant when a terrorist threatens to bomb the Miss United States pageant. And so it's available at Deep Discount for as a DVD for a great price, of course. And what I thought was interesting about it, they talked about in some reviews that it had moderate success, kind of tepid, lukewarm success, but did quite well at the box office. And she won some Golden Globes. She won a Golden Globe nomination for Best Actress and Motion Picture. But... it cost $45 million to produce, and the box office was about $213 million, so it wasn't too
Not bad.
Yeah.
We always laugh at the scene where Michael Caine, they go to an airplane hangar, and they're going to dollar up and get her ready for the Miss America thing. And every time that scene starts, so they show Michael Caine, like there's lights on her, they have beauticians doing her eyebrows, and then Bob goes, "We're gonna do a montage," from Team America. Because it's a montage, right?
A montage.
My film was very different, and it's a film that I loved when it came out, and I still love the studio and the animators behind it. It's called Chicken Run. Everybody probably remembers it. If you haven't seen it, it's definitely worth picking up on Blu-ray for $11.57. Aardman Studios did Chicken Run. They're well known for Wallace and Gromit, and the creators of Wallace and Gromit were Nick Park and Peter Lord. And it's set at Tweedy Chicken Farm in 1950s England. So Ginger, a mild-mannered hen, learns that the farm's owners plan to turn all of its inhabitants into chicken pie. It's like they have this machine that turns the chickens into pie. She enlists the help of an American rooster named Rocky, played by Sylvester Stallone, a very hysterical voice acting, to plan a great and dangerous escape to freedom. Oh, I'm sorry. Rocky was played by Mel Gibson. I got that wrong. And Miranda Richardson plays, I think she plays Ginger. So they, and Julia Sawala, now, why do I remember, was she Safi in Absolutely Fabulous?
Oh, that's a good one. I don't.
Julie Sawalha. I think that's, yeah, I had to double check that, but it's you're the one with
the memories. So don't ask me. You're the expert.
Hey, I just got Sylvester Stallone and Mel Gibson mixed up. It's stop motion. It's claymation animation. Brilliantly done. And there is a movie coming out, or is going to be, has just been released on Netflix. It's sort of a follow-up to Chicken Run. So here we are, 2000, this came out. And we do have a new release this week. And it is the hotly anticipated movie Wicked. Now, Tim, have you seen Wicked?
I haven't. And,
neither have I. But
friends who have, I would say 90% loved it. And there were a few that absolutely hated it, which I didn't
quite. I heard great things, but I also heard, yeah.
I heard mostly, I was going to say overwhelmingly great things. And so, no, I haven't seen it yet. I suppose I'll watch it now that it's available at home, right? You had to go to the theater. To see it.
A couple things about Wicked. I've heard that it's, if you follow this at all, it started as a book. The book's sort of dark, by the way. If you read Wicked, it's a kind of a prequel to The Wizard of Oz, and there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there. And they sell it at the theater that shows that the Broadway show where Wicked's at. I think people buy it thinking they're buying the book that they're seeing on stage. And the stage version is a little bit different. And then I heard an interview with someone who said that Wicked, the movie, was not necessarily a beat-for-beat reproduction of the Broadway show, but an interpretation of the book and the show to come to Wicked. So, but like Tim, I've heard 90-10. I've heard 90% got to see it. You're going to really love it. 10% no. And while I was preparing the show, I thought about this for a minute with Wicked. It sort of reminds me of Barbie. You know how everybody was going crazy for Barbie? And because when people go crazy for something, I'm like, I'm going to wait. So everybody went crazy for Wicked. And we discussed it at Christmas time when they had Santa Claus that dressed in the green suit.
And all the green suit. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So I may give it a, I'm going to definitely watch it, but I'm one of those horrible people that if the mob is running in one direction, I'm turning in the other.
Well, that's why you never liked Facebook.
I think you're right.
You were dead set against it.
Yeah.
But so hey, it's thanks again to our friends at Deep Discount. It's a Y2K 25th anniversary sale, and I picked the film Miss Congeniality. John picked Chicken Run, which I totally forgot about Chicken Run, so I'm glad you tweaked my memory with that. And the new release is Wicked on 4K Ultra HD. So be sure to go visit our friends at Deep Discount. You can get there by going to focusgroupradio.com, clicking on the Deep Discount logo, and start shopping away. We appreciate your support of them and their support of us. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a shop talk, where we talk about Super Bowl advertising, which is upon us in about a week, or a little less than a week, and also a business birthday, so stay with us.
You're listening to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com. Now back to the Focus Group with Tim and John. Available pretty much everywhere.
Welcome back to the Focus Group. John Nash with Tim Bennett. Focusgroupradio.com is our website. You can learn all about us there, our partner who we just visited with, Deep Discount. We're very happy to have them with us. And our alternate companion podcast, a little shorter, called TFG Unbuttoned. Three stories, quick in, quick out. A lot of them we'd curate because we think you might not know that they're out there. So, because we believe in promises made and promises kept, promise the business birthday, here you go.
Everyone does celebrity birthday greetings, but the Focus Group is the only show in the universe that celebrates business birthdays.
So born today, February 5th, 1943, Nolan K. Bushnell, happy 82nd birthday. He's an American businessman and electrical engineer. He established Atari, which we, of course, know for the famous game Pong, and also Chuck E. Cheese pizza.
Two very different
chain things,
Tim. Okay. Am I not crazy?
I'm glad Chuck you Cheese. Said. Yeah, Chuck E. Cheese and Atari, and also about 20 other companies.
Wow.
This is the one guy. I can't do it justice. We could probably do a 2-hour show on this guy with the amount of stuff he was involved with. And so we'll give a very Cliff Notes version. But he was inducted into the Video Game Hall of Fame and Consumer Electronics Association Hall of Fame. Also the nation's Restaurant News as Innovator of the Year. He was also named one of Newsweek's 50 Men Who Changed America. He started more than 20 companies and was one of the founding fathers of the video game industry. So he was born in Utah. He was a Mormon. He got in a fight in college at Utah State with a professor about the Bible and then left the faith.
Interesting. Okay.
Out of school, he was always fascinated. During the summers, he worked at an amusement park. And he would work some of these. They were just starting then, some of these in the 60s, these electronic games. But he was fascinated with the Midway and the fact that people paid money to play games on the Midway or games of chance and luck. And so he really got heavily involved with watching people play games and the joy of it and that they would pay for it. And he thought, I wonder if you could transfer that to home and somehow make money on it. So he wanted to go work for Disney. So he left college and goes off to California thinking Disney would hire him. He says he finds out Disney just doesn't hire kids fresh out of college at that point. So he goes to work for this little electronic manufacturer called Ampex.
Okay, now I know you.
And so while he's there, he meets a friend, and they start playing around on the side as, you know, they're doing electrical engineering work. But they end up developing this game, which turns out to be Atari and Pong. And it goes through all the history and machination of him doing that. And what was interesting about it was also working at the company were Steve Jobs and Wozniak. From Apple. Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs were working at Atari at the same time, or the company around Atari, which was the Ampex, if I'm saying it correctly. And they offered him a third of Apple because they wanted him to join them. And come on, he said not a good idea. Didn't think it was going to be a good idea. He says, I'll read it just because it's written better than what I could say. It says, during this period, former Atari employees Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak approached Bushnell about investing in their home computer system, the Apple. It was built from borrowed parts from the Atari game and with technical support from Atari employees. They offered the design to Bushnell and Atari, but Bushnell said he didn't want to buy Apple and thought he'd like to focus on Atari home game controls and more video games. Said later in 1975, Jobs offered Bushnell a chance to buy 1/3 stake in Apple Inc. for $50,000. Bushnell now remarks in hindsight, I was so smart, I said no. It's kind of fun to think about what would be when I'm not crying.
he said, that stake would be worth
millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Billions, right?
Yeah.
They said Bushnell, then he went on with, he ends up selling Atari for $28 million, and he keeps $15 million of it. So however the negotiation was done, He gets $15 million for the sale of Atari in 1976. First thing he does is he goes and buys the mansion from the guy who founded Folgers Coffee. And that's where he and his wife and the kids live. And then he decides he still wants to have the idea of, again, back to the amusements, and put together this pizza parlor that would also have video games and places for children to come play games. So it was combining entertainment with, you know, the arcade. With
food. And his love of games, right?
And his love of games. So they really credit him with being this Chuck E. Cheese is what he developed. And they said he was the pioneer of family entertainment, or the family entertainment concept, where Chuck E. Cheese was the first family restaurant to integrate food with arcade games and animated entertainment. And so he had Chuck E. Cheese up until 1986. They filed bankruptcy. It was rebought by another company and reimagined. It's still in existence today. But he's very much still alive. He's doing lots of games now for aging and the aging population.
Keep you alert. Keep your mind going, right?
Right. And also involved in a number of other things. Of course, all kinds of accolades and awards in his life. You can go on and on and on. But anyway, happy 82nd to Nolan.
What a cool birthday.
Bushnell. But I laugh. Can you imagine that Steve Jobs and Wozniak's working with you at Atari, and he invented Pong. I mean, they did the whole thing. And hey, for 50,000, give us 50,000, you could have a third of Apple. Nah, I want to make this console for home entertainment.
You know, it's so would.
But who knew, right?
Right.
Who knew in the '70s, right?
And Apple's always, you know, Apple had a very underdog status for a long time. Like, you know, why would we invest in Apple? They're not going to sell it. The PC's going gangbusters. I mean, Apple, though, you know, is one of those companies. You know that Simon Sinek, Know Your Why?
Yeah.
Apple's why was always, we make products that allow you to do more or be more creative. And their why was very much a very defined thing. Whereas Dell we make cheap computers. That's a very different.
Right.
So now we have, and I think Apple would be in a very different place in the world if Steve Jobs had not done the iPhone. Transformative device that, you know, because before that, the most sophisticated thing you and I had was the BlackBerry Pearl. Remember the BlackBerry, the keyboard, little keys.
Were you ever offered the opportunity to buy into something you didn't
have
to turn it
into? No, not like that. Not like that, no.
Yeah. I had two situations. I wouldn't say they were offered. Well, one was offered and one was an idea. Remember Peter Cook?
Yes.
He came to me and said, and he came to a few of us and said, you know, he wanted to buy stock in this new company called Yahoo. And he wanted each of us to come up with $5,000, I think, or the total was $5,000 he needed from the three of us or whatever. And of course, we didn't do it. I don't know whether he actually did it or not. But about 8 years later, he comes strolling down. I remember, he goes, remember that time I asked you about Yahoo? He goes, it's worth $3 million right now.
But you have no idea if he did it or not.
I don't know. Knowing him, I'm sure he probably did or whatever, but he just kind of turned around like, remember that time? And then another time, I was offered with Jay to have the full rights to Tommy Hilfiger and in Mid-America and the Mid-Atlantic.
Jeez.
Other than New York City for $100,000.
Knowing how Tommy now sells.
And this was 1986. Of course, we didn't have a pot to piss.
A and B, it was also a really, really vertical preppy brand before it kind of spread to the urban and, you know, right? It was... You would have had to decide like what you're going to do with that, right?
Well, you would have got royalties off of, and how it would work is, you know, they had clothing at Macy's and all these other places. So you would have received royalties on everything sold that you wholesaled in. Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
I'll say this, Bob's, I haven't had offers like that, but one day I was talking to Bob's mom, and this is like, you know, simple investing 101. One day she's wondering about all the boxes that are coming into buildings from Amazon and stuff like that. And she thinks to herself, I wonder who makes those boxes. And so she invests in a cardboard company. She made a pretty penny.
Good for her.
Jean is very clever. And I remember what she told me. And that's the day, like, I came home one day and my doorman was sorting all these boxes from diapers.com. And he said, John, I don't know where this is going to go, but he used to work at UPS too. And he said, we are seeing a ton of these diapers.com thing. I was like, oh, that's interesting. 6 months later, Amazon bought diapers.com for $1.6 billion to be part of their
another thing.
So if you had owned it, yeah.
We missed it.
Well, I guess.
Right, because nobody wants to go buy diapers, right? So if you could have them delivered.
Have them delivered, yeah. And the thought was that they would be a standalone, they would grow, but Amazon has a way of gobbling up things that they see as competition.
Well, when we do our deal, Amazon's going to buy our company.
Buy us out.
Yeah.
Maybe go sit in an Adirondack chair.
All set. We'll be all set.
So at the top of the show, I mentioned a shop talk that we were going to have today, and it's basically a headline that came across, I think it's Fortune magazine. It's an opinion piece, mostly. And the headline was, spending $10 million on a Super Bowl ad is like buying a giant billboard that faces the wrong way. Now, the reason this appealed to me is Tim and I have had for years private and very public discussions about what we think of the Super Bowl in terms of what companies spend to be there for a grand total of 30, 60, or 90 seconds, depending on what they're spending. But the footprint for the average company that decides they're going to jump into the Super Bowl is probably a $10 million price tag. And that's on the low end, because you can pay up to $7 million for 30 seconds on this year's game. I think that was the cost. So for years when we were on Sirius Satellite Radio, we would have creative directors on or people who had agreed to do a Super Bowl spot. And it's like, you're going to do a Super Bowl spot. Yay! You're going to do a Super Bowl spot. Oh no, what am I going to do? And the way the article talks about this is, the way I, Tim, we'll share notes on this or compare this, but I feel it's very much the same. He talks about the expenditure of it. What is the actual cultural impact of being a moment in a Super Bowl? Why do advertisers return so often and try to top themselves all the time? The danger of trying too hard, like trying to create an ad that's just so perfect that you end up missing the mark. And what is the actual entertainment value of the ad, and what is its actual real impact? And there's a line in here, something like, you know, when the ads come on, people refill the nacho bowls. There's your moment.
Right, so, or they run to the bathroom or the kitchen, or they're fighting over the last play, right?
So here's a funny little thing about the Super Bowl, though, that a lot of you probably know that are listening. There's the Super Bowl, and then way back in the day, and I'm talking 15, 20 years ago, there used to be the gay Super Bowl. And the gay Super Bowl was paying attention to every ad. I couldn't tell you what was going on in the game, but I knew what was going on advertising-wise. That's changed a great deal. But did you concur with this guy's thought process, the author's piece?
Yes. I would never, even if my company had billions of dollars to spend on a marketing budget, nobody ever has enough in their marketing budget, right? No matter who you are. I would not recommend, only because I saw it a dismal failure with Subaru trying to do it. Bought 6 Super Bowl ads, if you can believe it, in one Super Bowl.
6.
Now, of course, they weren't $7 million at that time, but it was still millions of dollars investments for a small brand. And it was going to, you know, elevate the brand to the top, you know, top of the heap in the auto industry. And, you know, sales went down. So so a lot of times, as you said, companies get all excited about doing a Super Bowl ad, but it is so difficult to try to get that lightning in a bottle, right? And we've seen where they talk in this piece about how people say, okay, let's just give basic advertising information, the facts, but then, oh no, I've got to entertain more. And next thing you know, there's a clown and a juggler and a celebrity and another celebrity and a dog and something else. And then nobody even knows the message, which got me thinking. And I was going to ask you this question. Are there any Super Bowl ads you remember? Is the first question.
And you know, it's funny that he remembers some of the same ones we do too. So it's Maya Angelou once said something about people might not remember what you said, what you did, but they will remember how you made them feel. Right. And I think that's true of the Super Bowl ads, especially if I tell you that the Clydesdales have always been an emotional ad, right?
Yeah.
The Darth Vader ad that VW did for the Jetta, which, you know, or was that the Passat? I forget what car it was, but it almost doesn't matter, because it was Darth Vader and VW, right? And it was like a magical ad. It took off. They tried to replicate it the next year with a really expensive recreation of the Star Wars bar scene, the whole bit. And the only other ad I really remember is a Doritos ad. And it goes way back, where this guy's in a sea of people. They're all, it's like an H&R Block type thing. People are doing taxes, and the guy's doing the guy's thing. He goes, I smell refund. And the guy goes, really? He goes, no, not really, but have a Doritos. Like, it was just one of those, it was a funny, kitschy, stupid ad, right? But those are the ones I remember some other ones, but not quite as well as I should, I guess. They don't really leave that kind of an impact. What are yours?
Yeah, I remember the Budweiser 9/11 one with Clydesdales.
Yes, which they all bow their heads. Yeah.
Very emotional. I remember a Pepsi ad. There was a fart joke in that one. I believe it was Pepsi. But again, mm-hmm. we're not so sure of the brand, right? I remember the joke. Yeah. And there were some classic things along the way, but the next question would be, whether you remember it or not, did you buy or support the service or product? Have you seen something in the Super Bowl and said, oh, I've got to check out that particular car or that
not
particular
at all.
You know, service, or I'm going to go to McDonald's and get that new sandwich they're coming out with or wherever it is? I don't think so either. I don't think I've watched anything.
Launching off that, this guy says, and he talks about the decisions for making these ads, and Tim has sat in the room with this exact thing going on. In conference rooms, phrases like brand synergy and cultural footprint are tossed around like confetti. By the way, the author's name is Richard Torrenzano. What's missing in these discussions is an honest acknowledgement of the $10 million-plus price tag once you factor in airtime, production, teasers, client entertainment, staff hours, and amount of hidden costs. At the end, he says, but the numbers don't lie. Spending $10 million on a single ad is about as smart as pinning your retirement on a scratch-off win.
Your scratch-off might be better. Better
might
odds.
Might even be better. But Tim, I think Tim raises two... For us in our industry, for advertising and marketing, he raises the most critical questions you would have is, did the consumer remember the ad? Did they act on it? And if you can't answer those two things in the positive, then you just really took a fire hose and shot the money out the window, right?
Well, and you brought up the Volkswagen ad with Darth Vader, which was for the Passat.
Yes.
And
lightning in a bottle.
It was one of those social media phenomena where I think it had more clicks and dashes and views and dots than any other ad ever for the Super Bowl. Guess what? The car went out of production a year or two later. It didn't sell. Mm-hmm. So this goes to show all of this nonsense about measuring clicks and views and dots and dashes did not help Volkswagen, even though it had the most popular or most viewed or most viral moment on the Super Bowl. It did not sell cars. And so was it worth it? I don't know. It'd be interesting to ask some of the folks at Volkswagen, because they've never gone in again after the flop of the year after.
The year when they did the Mos Eisley canteen ad.
Right. Yeah. They tried to, as you said, they tried to capture it again, that success they had with the Darth Vader and the little kid. Very simple premise with the car and the key fob and the car turning on, which is very cute, was lovable, simple. Adorable, and simple.
Think about the production, Tim. They had a driveway, a car, mm-hmm. a mom, a dad, and a kid, and a costume.
It probably cost them nothing compared to probably less than $1 million to produce. But I wondered about this. Now, Subaru, I remember after, even while I was there, we did the Puppy Bowl, which is over on the Animal Planet.
I love watching
Puppy
Bowl.
Which is really, you know, counter to the Super Bowl, right? And meanwhile, I think Dodge was doing the Lingerie Bowl with that Julie Rahm. Remember that disaster? So, but they do the poop, and I haven't heard much about the Puppy Bowl anymore. I don't even know if it's still around.
Oh, they still do Puppy Bowl.
Do they still do it?
I thought it was Discovery Network does it. And
I haven't Purina's seen much
on
about
there.
It.
Subaru was on there many years. Subaru's been on the Puppy Bowl.
Yeah. And that made more sense for the brand and far better investment. And again, cheaper. It's the eyes of the consumer. The consumer that purchases, or the demographic that purchased Subaru, was probably more likely to be interested in the Puppy Bowl than the Super Bowl. Though I think we all watch where they say it's still America's last great campfire. It's the last thing that we all watch as a country and watch it together, because it's only on that one time. With the way media is fragmented. I'll watch. You're going to watch. You'll watch.
Yeah,
you'll have it on.
Yeah, we're definitely going to watch. But because things have changed so much, our friend Stuart Elliott, who used to write the weekly column for advertising in the New York Times, used to literally set up shop in front of the TV with his notepad on the Super Bowl. Tim and I did the same thing. We used to do it over on Sirius as well. We would rank the ads. We'd look at the people meter, what one was popular, what one wasn't. And I'm sad to say that in the 2020s, at least for the last two or three years, this gets about a day before press time, a day after, and it's gone from the public consciousness. Yep. And it's just the way the news cycle is. And we also think these brands have shot themselves in the foot by trying to maximize the investment by shoving all this stuff onto social media previews, you know, here's what we could see, you know, special things. People, yeah.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that way.
But we'll talk about what ads we liked next week.
Yeah, we will.
We'll let you
and,
know.
And we won't be buying the product unless it's something that we really adore.
Are we already bought
I do it? Remember that there was a Pepsi ad, a Diet Pepsi ad that had Carson Kressley, who is the original cast of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, where he's walking with a model and some guy walks by and he turns his head to look at the hot guy.
That was Diet Coke.
It's Diet Coke. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Diet Coke.
I only know that because it was the same agency Subaru had.
Okay.
So they did the ad, but yeah.
And so for Tim and I, those little LGBTQ moments that would pop up in the Super Bowl ads, if they popped up at all, we would pay attention to those as well.
Yeah. So so anyway, I hope you look forward to the big game. I hope the Eagles win.
Yeah, I have no skin in the game. So I'm going to say the city of brotherly love deserves a win.
Okay, good. Well, I'll go with you on that. So, hey, thanks for joining us here on the Focus Group. And be sure to follow along with us at all times at focusgroupradio.com. All of our media is housed there. You'll also find our podcast there, which is TFG Unbuttoned. Thanks again to our friends at Deep Discount. They've been with us here for quite some time. They've got a Y2K sale going on right now. I picked the movie. World's ending. I picked Miss Congeniality. John picked Chicken Run. And the new release this week is Wicked. On 4K Ultra HD. So be sure to pick up a copy of that while you're shopping around at Deep Discount. Remember, don't text and drive, arrive alive, and we'll see you next time here in the Focus Group. Take care.
It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash. Accessible on all platforms. Subscribe, like, and rate us on your platform of choice. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com.
That was a stunning Focus Group.